Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump Podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
And my name is Ashton.
Good morning, everybody.
No, it isn't. It's cold.
Yeah, it's
cold
really
morning,
cold.
Everybody. There is a heater / air conditioner up here.
Oh, there it goes. I was just about to say,
it's not doing anything, but it just went, oh.
Has it stopped again now?
It's quiet now.
Okay.
But it is blowing hot air.
Okay, excellent
news. I took my hoodie off because I wanted to not be told off for not wearing a Christmas jumper. So I put my Christmas jumper on, but now I'm just cold because I haven't got my hoodie on. So.
Well, in a few moments, you'll be warm.
It is actually blowing out. Warm air. I can confirm. I was just about to say, wow, what a crap thing that's on the wall there. But actually,
smells a bit funny, I think.
Don't think it's been used in a while.
Does it?
Something does.
I can't smell it. You sure it's not your apple tank, your breakfast tank?
No, it's not. It smells of hot air.
Oh, okay. Like dust. Like
burning
dust.
Yeah, hot dust.
My radiator smelled like that recently. So we should be warm soon.
Yeah.
That's the important thing. We hope you're all keeping warm and safe at home.
Yeah.
Like most people, I think none of us wanted to turn on our radiators
because
it costs so much money.
Mm-hmm.
And also we'd let Martin Lewis down.
Yeah.
And that's the real tragedy.
I felt really bad this week with having my heating on.
Yeah.
But my boyfriend moved in and apparently he's always cold.
Oh,
so he's always turning the heating on and I'm like,
I can't feel my nose.
Martin Lewis is going to be very sad with me.
Yeah. I've never been more happy, and I don't want to brag, to have carpet in my house because I've been living in various houses and apartments. You know, most apartments don't have carpets, and the house I lived in was all like the original floorboards and through the whole house, apart from the stairs. So if I still lived in that old house, I'd just be standing on the stairs all the time.
Hang on the stairs. I feel like I've gotten very lucky then. I've always had carpet.
Have you?
You've got carpet upstairs in the house, but downstairs it's cold.
So you've got carpet now. So you also, not to brag.
Not to brag.
I've got furry floors.
Yeah.
So I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Welcome to our video game podcast. This is the penultimate podcast.
No? Of what? The year?
Yeah.
No, there's another one, and then there's 199 that comes on New Year's Eve.
Oh, yeah, we're doing one next week, aren't we? I forget. Yeah because next week it is a full week. It's very confusing.
For some people next week, but we'll
it's the penultimate podcast, two removed from the end. Anyway, it doesn't matter. This is a regular video game podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Each and every week, we're sponsored by a very real video game adjacent sponsor. Helps us to keep the lights on here. Still no sign of Dead Island 2.
It's in my house.
The spider is in Ashton's house, as we've discussed previously. Peter, I believe you've got the ad read there.
I have. It's a brand new special version of a well-known popular console that is coming out to celebrate the time of year that this is.
Okay.
It's seasonal. Right. It's exciting. Some would argue there's already too many versions of this console to keep your head around. By that, I mean two. But the third one is coming out now. It's the Xbox Series.
That's Slurries. Not part of
the Slurries. It's the Xbox Series X/mus.
The Xbox Series
Xmas. Yeah.
So is it red and white or green?
Does it say jingle bells?
Yeah, all the time. Just
when
endlessly.
You turn it on, it just loops like that forever.
It sort of spits snow out of the back. Not
that
at the front.
That doesn't sound good.
It just goes into the wall.
Yeah, the sockets yeah. and yeah. stuff. Okay.
Fake so snow.
What only will works Phil think in of the next? Month of December.
Yeah, ridiculous. It does. Yeah. If you want it to work in for the rest of the year, you have to like hack it, the internal right. clock, so that it thinks it's Christmas Day all the time.
So the snow that it spits out, is it real snow or is it artificial snow?
No, I think it's just actual polystyrene
it's
balls.
It's not got an ecosystem okay. inside of it. It's not going to be real
well,
snow.
I don't know. This
could be.
Video games
are money
magic.
Over there at Microsoft.
I don't know. They could just buy weather.
Yeah.
Just buy weather. Just acquire buy weather.
You know, yes. like Nikola Tesla.
Well, they've already
did.
Got Blizzard, yeah. which I guess technically is snow.
Well, exactly. So it's not quite so silly, is it?
No.
Really,
no.
when you think
you know
about
what?
It.
Fair point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's real.
Yeah.
And it's real.
When's
it's
it out?
It's not.
What?
Oh. When's it out? It's not out because it's not real.
Damn it.
Jingle balls. Oh. I really thought yeah. that was a real one there.
What a jingle bell end.
Jingle bollocks.
Bollocks. No, we're not sponsored by the Xbox Series Xmas. We are sponsored by our very real patrons over at patreon.com. If you go there and you give as little as $1 per month, you get access to the question post for this podcast. You can submit questions and get your name read out. It's amazing. There's loads of other tiers as well. And we'd really appreciate your support. Thank you to all of our patrons who've supported us this year.
It's basically 25 cents per episode, really. Mm.
It's a bargain.
Ish.
Sort of. Mm. Yeah, absolute bargain. Thank you to all of our patrons. Is it time for question one?
Yeah, all right. Thank you to Juliet Cosmic Roach, in parentheses, for this question. Hiya, Bap. I was playing Mass Effect this week. Yet again, it says. That's not me making a snide
yet
mark.
Yet again. You're classic Juliet.
Play something else, Juliet. And got to thinking about an in-universe game set around shore leave where your character takes vacations on all of the various planets. No war, no drama. It got me thinking, are there any game worlds you would like to see explored in a different genre? For example, would you want to see a dating sim set in Skyrim? Or maybe a high-stakes alien invasion come to your Animal Crossing island? Or perhaps a Dark Picture-style game where you're running a restaurant instead of running for your lives? Thank you for all you do. Much love from America, Juliet.
From America.
Thanks, Juliet.
Thank you, Juliet. Thank you.
I would like to... I think this sort of exists in fiction, probably more in sort of... like novels and stuff rather than I don't think there's a video game of this. There might be, but I would like to see a fantasy world, fairly maybe Skyrim or something like that. It doesn't really matter, but something with like goblins in it. Mm. But you play as the goblins and all you do, you're just like kitting out your dungeon in a nice way. You're just decorating it. You can getting outfits and stuff. It's like Project Makeover.
Yeah.
But you're a goblin instead of a hero.
So you're not trying to hurt people invading your dungeon? You
no,
just want to make
not
it
even
look
like,
nice?
Yeah, it's not even like a sort of a tower defense or a strategy game where you build the traps and then the hero attacks. It's just, no, this is my smelly cave and I'm going to... You do things to like earn coins or whatever, you know, leaves, whatever they use as currency.
Sticks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you can like craft and stuff and then build, you know, skulls on the wall and spikes in the floor. And
so like the Sims build mode.
Yeah.
But for dungeons.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice.
That's what I'd like to do.
That sounds nice.
You know, let's just see it from their perspective for once. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
No wonder they're so annoyed that we're always invading their like strongholds.
They work so hard.
Yeah.
No wonder they're always going nihi ha 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 ha
yeah.
and trying to kill us all. they always be like that.
Yeah. Just because they really like what they've done with the place and they don't want you to mess it up.
Nihi ha 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 is goblin for welcome to my wonderful cave.
Not only do you mess it up, but you come in and you don't even take a look around and appreciate it before you mess it up. At least if you're going to mess it up, at least walk in and go, oh,
wow.
I like
the
what you've done with the place.
I'm going to feel really bad about getting your blood all over this lovely upholstery.
Yeah. Especially if they've got a new outfit on and they're looking pretty cute.
Yeah.
I'm going to get, is that a new outfit? Is that your hat? I like your hat.
I've never seen those really gloves before.
Where'd you get that from?
That's good.
That's so nice.
And then it goes, stop, big pop-up. You need to wait 24 hours before you get more goblin bucks.
Yeah,
like
gobbucks.
Gobbucks.
That's what I want to play. So someone make it, all right?
Yeah, hurry up.
Ashton, what would you like to see?
So predictably, the only world that I want to continue exploring It's Horizon.
It's Saints Row.
It's Saints Row. specifically, Horizon Forbidden West, because I would like a farming sim structured around the... Oh, I should have Googled what the tribe name is. They're like farming tribe that's in Forbidden West.
I know who you mean.
That use the...
The
Wurzels. I want to say it's like the Utaku or something, but
the,
I can't remember.
The Utaku.
Yeah. And they've got like machines that help plow the land for them. Mm. And then there's like all the things that they farm because they're like completely living off the land gang. And I just think that they would be a nice like farming sim.
Utaru,
thank you. You play as one of them and you just like go out, tend the crops, come home to your family.
Worship your big elephant, your moose creatures. What are they?
Triceratopses.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? Yeah, yeah, that's what they look like.
Sing a song because they always sing songs. Mm-hmm. I think that would be nice. Yeah. Just that hang out in the world, farming some stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys have gone for some pretty chill options.
Yeah.
I've not.
Oh, gosh.
This is sort of spun off from a conversation we've already had that will go out in a couple of weeks for, we're doing a podcast that goes out the week that none of us are in across the holiday. It's sort of a Q&A, a quick fire Q&A from questions from our patrons. And we got to talking about genres and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to sort of repeat myself a little bit, but what I would like is a mashup.
Preemptively repeat myself is a mashup
between a survival horror game set in the Everybody's Gone to the Rapture universe. Mm-hmm. So a walking sim where it's highly atmospheric anyway and you feel like there's someone watching, but there isn't usually in walking simulators, but actually there is, and it's going to mess with you and it's going to really freak you out and spook you up, and there's no combat, you can't die, it's just a thoroughly uncomfortable, frightening experience
and
from start to finish.
Charming English village.
Absolutely.
With the cast of the Archers.
Absolutely. And maybe it's a slow burn, maybe there's some strange things going on and you're picking up clues and working out what's happening. But then as the sun begins to set and it becomes nighttime, it becomes fright time as well. And it's a bit spooky and weird. Mm. That's what I'd like. I also would not like to play it because it will scare me. Yeah. But I like the idea of it very much.
For someone else to play.
Yes, exactly.
Peter play it on stream together.
And I will watch him.
Yeah.
By sort of very bravely just reading the chat and not looking at the screen.
Yeah.
I would play that.
I'll read the chat and any logs of text you find, but I will not play the game.
I shan't play the game. No, because then I'm complicit and the monsters will follow me home and scare me at night.
Yeah.
And I'm too clever for that. You're too not going to get
me. Because you're a British boy who sounds like he's from the Archers, apparently. Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah, that's you. So they're your prime target. You are their prime target.
Exactly. They'll hear me and go, God, got to haunt that guy. Let's mess up his whole day.
Yeah.
Let's move on to a section we've never done before.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which one of you would you like? Was last?
It's called What We Play In.
It's What We Play In time. Time to talk about the games, what we have been playing. Peter, what we have you been playing?
What we have I been playing? The Nintendo Wii.
Excellent.
That's what I've been playing. Had a great time with it, with my grandma.
Lovely.
No, not true. I've been playing, I think it's safe to say this, almost certainly. Me and Amy wanted to get a present for her younger brother for Christmas. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a revelation. She wanted to get a present for her younger
brother.
No.
Does this younger brother deserve a present?
Well, I don't know.
Have they been a good boy?
What I mean to say is she wanted to get an extra present. She'd got him some presents and she was like, I think he'd maybe like a game, but I don't really know what to get.
Right.
So I've been showing Amy a couple of games that I think might be appropriate for her younger brother. Mm. So we played a bit of Sackboy.
Lovely.
Which was a lot of fun. Amy was complete. She doesn't like Sackboy as a character.
Really?
She finds him a bit scary looking.
Oh, but he's design. So lovely.
I can get
so
that. Lovely. He's got soulless eyes.
He has got soulless eyes.
Yeah, they're buttons. But he's lovely.
Yeah, but we had good fun with that. And we played some Gang Beasts as well. I thought that might be one for him. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I want to play, which I've never actually played before anyway, but also I want to play it just to see if it's something that we should maybe get for him, is Body Fall Flat. Are you aware of that one?
Body Fall Flat?
I think it's called Human Fall Flat. Yeah.
I was like, I mean, is this a spin-off?
I recognize the end part. Yeah, Human Fall Flat. Yeah.
You know, like Human Fall Flat sounds way better than Body Fall Flat, doesn't it?
I was like, I know, like, Human Fall Flat Human is a very popular flat. Game.
You said it, and I couldn't think of the real name for a good few seconds.
Yeah, I mean, I
thought
think
it was
of
like
it
a spin-off
until
that
it came
I hadn't
out of my mouth, and it turned out that I hadn't thought of it correctly.
Human Fall Flat, yeah.
And it was something Fall Flat. But the reason Body came to mind, for those who don't know, is that it's a very physics-y game, isn't
yes.
it? And you have to like do puzzles together, and there's co-op available in it. So I'm going to give that a go.
It's a lot like Body Beasts.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and Body Boys Flat. Big Adventure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just been doing a bit of research, really, the two of us, trying to decide what to get. I think probably we're going to get him... I think we settled on Sackboy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one you can actually buy on disc.
Yeah, well, and that's
the other
thing.
Ones might be on disc.
I think sure. One of the other two, or maybe both of the other two are available, because that was the other okay. thing. It would be nice to be able to wrap it up. But
yeah.
So that was nice. And actually, because didn't you play a bit of Sackboy recently?
Yes,
yeah.
I'm playing it at the moment.
That's partly how it came to mind when I was thinking of like, what should we get him? And wow, it's fun, isn't it?
It's so lovely.
I've missed it, really.
The musical levels are great. Yeah. Just the music in general in that game is really good.
Yeah.
I might need to put it on my to playlist.
Yeah, it's lovely.
I think I've played it before.
You and Bennett have a great time.
Yeah,
you
I think so, but we haven't played it for like a good while, but I don't think we ever finished the story of it. So.
Man, the story is
yeah.
It's not. Well, because you don't go to Sackboy for story.
No.
Well, because a little bit of me was then thinking like, oh, fun, charming co-op games. I was like, hey, what about It Takes Two? I don't think we should maybe give that.
Yeah,
a
lot of people thought that was a kid's game. We had some of our listeners and viewers write in about, oh, I'm playing this with my
my
daughter. Yeah, and it's like, oh, I don't know about that.
Maybe skip one bit.
Yeah, it looks, I mean, I just don't think it's appropriate for kids, full stop.
I mean, he's not that young, but he prefers that sort of game. So,
About Lego game. Star Wars?
Lego Star Wars.
Such a good game.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
What about Saints Row?
Yeah.
Saints Row.
Really good.
Saints All Row. These options. Mm. Yeah.
Elden Ring.
I think he enjoyed Lego Harry Potter at the time. So, but that was on Plus, so he might have that now.
Mm.
Right.
But so yeah, that's it. Bit of research, Christmas nice. Research happening. But we had a good time doing it. So
lovely.
Yeah, and we're probably going to finish Sackboy now. I think maybe just because.
Amazing. It's great fun.
I played two things this week.
Yeah, go on.
Short amounts for both of them due to situations. I have played some High on Life, about an hour and a half.
Oh, yeah.
And I like the mechanics of the game. I like the way it looks. But I just feel like I'm going to get tired of the humor of that game.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Rick and Morty before anyone comes to my throat.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Rick and Morty. I haven't watched the last two seasons of it just
me
because
neither.
I've got other things going on and I haven't got time to watch my man burp at me for half an hour every week.
20 minutes
every week.
Still too long.
So I was like, hey, maybe I'll like this. But there's just so much that's just like not needed. Like, I get the humor of it, but some of it's like, did we need that? Like, could we not have just skipped past this? Like, it seems like a lot to just sit down and play. I think that the game itself was only maybe like 4 or 5. Well, I don't know. I've heard different things that it's only like 4 hours long, but also that it's like 15 hours long. So I don't know what to believe.
Okay.
But I do think that unlike Rick and Morty, where you get it in like short bursts of like 20 minutes, this game will go on for hours and you will have to just kind of suck it up and deal with it. But there's just like characters I'm like, I just like, why are you here? I get you're supposed to be like funny, but it's just not funny. And I don't know if I'm broken. And by that, I mean, I don't think I'm broken at all. I just think my sense of humor is different.
It's the children
but
who are wrong.
I just, man, I don't know. And like, I know that obviously Rick and Morty is famous for like, you know, having swear words in it and there's, you know, flips.
Mm-hmm.
And ships all over the place.
Whoa,
bloody hell.
But in this game, it's just like characters just constantly swearing. There's like a HUD character that's like in your HUD talking to you about like where to go. And even the little like inbuilt AI in the suit swears at me. And I like swear words. I say them all the time. But I'm like, hey guys, calm down now.
Chips.
Calm, please.
That's the name of that casino in Rick and Morty, isn't it? Flips and Chips.
Flips and Chips,
Flips and
yeah,
chips,
absolutely.
Yeah.
That's it.
But the mechanics of it so far I've enjoyed. And I'm going to keep playing it when I can access my PC again. Because right now it's in the quarantine room.
The COVID room.
The COVID room. And yeah, I'll give it another go. But I do definitely feel like I might not finish it because of the comedy and the humor in it. I just think it's a bit much. You have to, there's like a setting to just like turn off extra dialogue, slash turn it down, because obviously they were like, this is too much. Things talk all the time on like however they wanted it to be. Things talk almost constantly. So yeah, I'm intrigued about what's going to happen, but I don't know if I'll finish the game. Mm. Maybe it'll grow on me. I don't think it will.
About 7.5 hours.
According
to How Long to Beat.
And also, I've played some more Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, mainly because it was installed on my PlayStation and I didn't know what else to play because I wanted to play Saints Row.
Oh, God.
But I can't because both PlayStations are currently downstairs and my boyfriend is quarantined in the upstairs bedroom. So.
Oh.
But Call of Duty's fine.
Yeah, you shot some boys?
Shot some boys.
Great stuff.
Shooting girls?
Maybe. I don't discriminate in war.
No, I know.
You know?
All's fair.
War crimes for everyone.
Exactly. So that's what I've played this week.
Excellent.
Great.
I played a few things. I'm going to start by talking about the demos that were made available as part of the Game Awards last week. Mm. I played a demo for Forspoken, Bramble the Mountain King, and Season. Firstly, Forspoken, I wasn't a big fan of it.
I've heard that.
It doesn't. It may have just been the demo. It was like 30 gigabytes, but it doesn't run very well.
Apparently, it doesn't control very well. Like the combat, some people, is a bit divisive.
I found it quite overwhelming, to be honest. I know that the intention is they drop you in just an area of the map when you've got some stuff unlocked. Mm. But it did a lot of explaining, and then I found that I went into the skill tree and I was like, what am I looking at? This insane spider web of like really hard to read font.
Good.
Wasn't a fan of that. The combat was not that amazing. I don't know. I've seen some people say that they really liked it.
But yeah, I have as well.
But. I didn't really enjoy it. And the little bracelet thing was like bantering back and forth with your character. And again, I know they can't be talking about like story pertinent stuff at that time because it wouldn't make any sense. But they end up just bickering back and forth. There was a lot of repeated dialogue.
Kieran really hated the cuff.
Apparently you can turn it off. You can turn the frequency that the cuff talks to you off. It was all just, I don't know. It just felt a bit weird.
I feel like we're not going to get many demos because I don't feel like this Forspoken one has gone the way that anyone was hoping it would go.
I feel like all the pre-release reaction to Forspoken has been largely negative. Like I feel like they're really
like meme on it a lot.
The final game is probably going to be at least pretty good.
Yeah.
And I just feel like they're doing themselves a disservice.
Well, that's why I didn't play the Forspoken demo because I was tempted. And then before I got round to playing it, I'd seen that there was this sort of, you know, it was a bit divisive. And I thought, I'm either going to enjoy this game or I'm not. I'm probably going to play it anyway. So I might just not play this demo that like might just make me feel like, oh, that's going to be a bit rubbish. Like I know I'm going to get it and give it a go. So I may as well just do that.
Is it over now, the demos?
I don't know. I don't know if it's still there or not. But you can give that a go if it's still there. I played Season, which is the really gorgeous art style one where we've seen it a couple of times at Jeff Keighley's big game jamborees of various flavors. I'm not sure really how to describe it so that people might remember. You play as a woman with sort of big circular glasses and you're walking around in nature. They've got a bike and they're like recording things with an audio recorder and taking photos and stuff, and it's basically kind of that again. The game drops you in, it says like you're being dropped in when you first got access to all your equipment. It's really pretty, it's extremely minimalist, and it's not going to be for everyone. But there's a bit at the end of that you've got this scrapbook that you're filling in as you go, and you can sort of decorate it how you want with stickers and things. And there are bits in this sort of township that you go to, which apparently you're from, where you take photos of there's vague descriptions or shapes of, or it's kind of hinting at what you should be taking photos of. And then you take photos of them, go into your scrapbook, and they like slap in, and you unlock some more customization options, like little flourishes for your book. You get a little audio recorder you can hold up and record sounds and stuff, and there are ones that you're meant to record. And then at the end, you get on your bike, you go down this hill, and then the camera like pulls all the way out, and it's really pretty as you go across this bridge. And you can still control yourself. So I was like smashing into the wall and just like veering all over the place. But it like said Season in the background on the horizon. It was really pretty. That's it's going to be one to watch, I think. Mm-hmm. But the one I enjoyed the most was Bramble the Mountain King, which I did actually message you about because you need to play it. It's basically Little Nightmares.
This is the one with the like Lady in the Lake that we've seen.
Yes, this is sort of like Nordic fairy tales. Yes. Very, I got sort of Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons and Little Nightmares vibes because it's pretty, the art style's kind of uncanny, sort of claymation-y, marionette-y kind of, I'm not really sure how to describe it, but mm-hmm. it's not like, they're not going for cutesy visuals. It kind of looks a bit scary. Like the way they've designed the little boy that you play as, who's sort of very, very small and making his way through this level. There's lots of darkness that you're jumping through these caves on almost sort of blind platforming. Mm. And then there's a guy in the lake who's screaming at you and you've got to try and dodge between his sort of sound waves that are coming for you. I was really impressed by it. And if you can still play the demo, I would recommend it. But I think you in particular would really like it.
Mm. I'll probably play the game. So again, I'm a bit like that with demos. I'm like, if I know I'm going to play it anyway, then I tend to not want the sort of sneaky peeks.
Sneaky peeks. Well, it's only 14 minutes long if people want to give it a go. It's nice and short demo to see what's going on there. I also played a little bit more God of War. I've just basically spent time mopping some stuff up, but I've now encountered a bug where it says that I have 47 out of 48 of the ravens, but when I go through each map, it says I have all the ravens.
Oh dear.
So there is one raven that it is marked as having been captured, but hasn't, and I am not about to go through 48 raven locations to find the one I haven't got. Fortunately, there's no trophy attached to the ravens, but I'm annoyed by that.
I had that same thing, but I don't know if it's a bug. I think that there is an extra raven that I like couldn't find in the thing.
Well, I googled that extensively in a lot of Reddit posts, and all that I could find were guides, like just general guides about here's where the ravens are.
Yeah.
And the Reddit posts I found were people genuinely saying, it says I've got all the ravens, but I actually don't have all the ravens. I don't know where it is. And people apparently reloaded and then it said, like on one of the maps, that they were missing one of the ravens. They were able to find it. Some people saying, "Oh, go to this location, and that's where I found it." And someone said, "Oh, yeah, it was there for me as well. I went there, it wasn't there." So I think I'm just kind of buggered on that front, but whatever. Whatever. A bit more Sackboy, and then I've also played Final Fantasy VII Crisis Core, Final Fantasy VII, Final Fantasy VII Crisis Core Reunion, whichever way around it is, which we will talk about in the review corner right now.
Oh.
All right, Ben, welcome to Review Corner.
Oh.
Isn't this exciting? It's my first one.
I feel like I'm in every bloody review corner at the moment. This is pretty much
my
space.
You just claim all the codes and you don't let anyone else have a go.
All mine. Yes. Thank you very much. Thank you also to Square Enix, who provided the code for Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion, which is what I'll
catchy
be telling
name.
You about today. Yeah, I think it was just called Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII to begin with. And now it's Reunion.
Yes.
This is a remaster.
Yes.
I want to be very clear about that.
Mm-hmm.
Not a remake. So this was originally a PSP game.
Yes.
And I have no idea why I didn't play it at the time. I think maybe I just heard some kind of mixed things about it and then didn't play it. But I had a PSP. Final Fantasy VII is my favorite game of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't I play the prequel?
It does.
Why didn't I do that?
That's a bit of a general consensus of like, really like Final Fantasy VII, didn't play Crisis Core. Because the people who I've spoken to who really are a fan of Final Fantasy VII are like, yeah, I never played
it. I feel like there's maybe some kind of Venn diagram between people who really enjoy Final Fantasy VII and people who consume literally any of the spin-off content, whether that be movies or the additional games. There's a game about Vincent Valentine as well on PS2. Dirge of Cerberus maybe is what it's called. Can't remember off the top of my
sounds
head
about right.
But I haven't played any of these because the story of Final Fantasy VII isn't the most straightforward in the world, and then they really go wacky, crazy time with all the spin-off stuff. But anyway, Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion is a remaster of a PSP game.
And it's a prequel to Final Fantasy
VII. It is a prequel. You play as Zack, who is a member of Soldier, which obviously Cloud is a member of Soldier as well in the main game. And if you know who Zack is from Final Fantasy VII proper, then I don't need to explain that, but I won't explain it because it's kind of spoilery anyway. So you play as Zack. He rubs shoulders with the likes of Sephiroth, who's also at Soldier at the time. And you're attempting to hunt down a rogue member of Soldier called Genesis. Zack then naturally uncovers some rather shady dealings about his employer, Shinra, as you go through. And the game wraps up just before the events of Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
So that's the timeline it sits in. In terms of the gameplay itself, it's sort of... I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. Almost like a hack and slash in a way. The combat is real time, much like the full Final Fantasy VII remake is. But there's various tweaks and twists on it. You can block, you can roll out of the way. You can do sort of a standard attack by mashing the square button. If you hold a shoulder button and press a face button, you do magic or use the materia that's equipped to those buttons. You can also use a similar combination of buttons to use items that you have in like a hotbar. You're much like Final Fantasy VII proper. Your materia levels up as you use it and you finish battles. But the real twist, the real strange thing about the game that is still in here, which, you know, it is a remaster, so of course it is, but it raised eyebrows at the time, and it still kind of does, is a thing called DMW, or Digital Mind Wave, which is a constantly spinning sort of slot machine that's in the top left-hand corner during combat.
Right.
And it will spit out, depending on the random stuff that it lines up with, it will spit out rewards from temporarily... there'll be no MP cost for magic, to invulnerability, to limit breaks, to summons, being able to use any summons you've got.
Oh, okay.
Depending on the story situation you're in, the likelihood of certain like limit breaks and various other aspects will be heightened, so the likelihood of you getting them. Mm-hmm. Weirdly, leveling up is also tied to the roulette wheel.
Oh.
So you don't, or not roulette wheel, the slots. So you don't, apparently there's some, I had a look online because it didn't really explain it very well, but if it hits 777, you level up.
Oh.
And fun. Seemingly there's some sort of secret quiet counter of XP gained from battle. And if it hits 777 and you've met the requirements, you level up. But it's kind of strange. Right. It's a weird approach.
So it won't just do 777 if you get enough XP. No. It will randomly do it even though you've got enough XP to level up.
Or does it?
Or does
it? I don't know.
Right.
Because it's seemingly random.
Cool.
It's really bizarre. I don't dislike it.
Yeah.
But it does sort of make you change your tactics on the fly. So if it comes up and says, oh, there's no AP cost at the moment, then you want to spam moves that cost AP so you can just, you know, there's no drawback.
Yeah.
It's the perfect time to use them. So I don't dislike it. It is really weird, but for the most part, I do quite enjoy the combat. You know, you lock onto enemies, you can roll out the way of attacks, it's not turn-based. So in that sense, it's quite in line with the remake.
Yeah.
It is essentially, for each of the maps that you're in, it's kind of basically a long winding corridor.
Right.
And you will see the big enemy of that area physically, like they'll be stood there, but it will still be random encounters.
Right.
And you can kind of tell where the random encounters are coming up. And I found that if you just hug the wall, you tend not to trigger them.
Cool.
Which is sort of a cheeky workaround.
Yeah.
But there we are. I haven't got too far into the game.
The pacifist run is just hug the wall.
Just ignore everything but the ones you have to kill, yeah. So speaking of being in line with the remake,
it
certainly, having not played the original, the menus and the sound effects for using the menus and a lot of the UI seems like it's really been overhauled and brought in line with the remake. So visually, it's very similar.
And the like graphics and stuff are similar to the remake, aren't they?
Well, the graphics are, they were on, you know, it was a PSP game.
Yeah.
I think it looks fantastic. They've done a really good job. It doesn't look anywhere near as good as the remake does.
Right.
You can tell it was a PSP game at some time. Like some of the animations are a bit clunky. Mm-hmm. The dialogue's a bit wonky in places and the voice acting's a bit... Naff, Zack in particular, is kind of annoying, but I think he's meant to be because he's very headstrong.
I think it's all new voice acting.
Okay, well, in which case, it's fine, I think. It's just the dialogue maybe is a bit stilted, the material that they've got to work with. But for what was a PSP game, I think the game looks fantastic.
Good.
It really looks very good. As I said, some of the cutscenes are a bit strange, but largely looks really, really nice. Cool. You can do side missions as well. Yeah. They just sort of, whenever you access a save point, you can press a button and view different side missions, and they're usually like, they plop you in an environment and say, go kill this thing. And that's basically what it is. But they have different difficulties and you get rewards for those. You can do those on the side. So I spent a lot of last night just spamming my way through those and getting loads of rewards, so that when I then went back to the main story, I was massively overpowered. Nice. It was great. Really enjoyed
that. Do you have like, is there like a party mechanic or is it just Zach?
It's just Zach. It's cool. Just Zach. So far, at least, it's just Zach. So you control Zach in that environment. And you're sort of based, so far at least, in the Shinra building itself, especially on the soldier floor, within which there's a materia room where you can create materia if you bring them certain materials. There's a training room, a briefing room. And then also in the Shinra building, you can go to the lobby and the exhibition room, which I think you do visit in the remake and the original game as well. It's the floor that has the car and the motorbike that they end up using.
Yes.
So you can go in there and have a little look around. And you can actually go out onto the streets of Sector 8 as well.
Cool.
And talk to a couple of people, and there's a couple of quests that get triggered from there. So there is some light exploration too. Mm. I honestly, as I said at the start of this, do not know why I didn't play it when it came out. And quite frankly, it may well be because it didn't play as well as it does now, with the benefit of having two analog sticks, for example. I'm kind of impressed by this. It's not going to be for everyone.
Good.
If you played the remake and you're itching for more Final Fantasy, it's been made pretty clear by Square Enix that they intend for this. It already was canon, obviously, but they intend for this to certainly influence or impact part two of the remake.
Zach was in the first part of the remake. Yeah, he was. We've seen a brief shot of him doing something.
We have, and he's really important to the full Final Fantasy VII game as well. But certainly by positioning the game as they have in terms of releasing it now and adding the subtitle Reunion, it's not necessarily a must play, but if you were debating whether or not to play it before playing part two, it might fill in a lot of the blanks.
Right, okay.
Or they might lean more heavily on it.
Yeah.
Then, because obviously this the PSP version came out way after the original PS1 game, whereas now they've got the benefit of potentially drawing stuff from that game into the remake part two. So I would recommend that you give it a go if you're a Final Fantasy VII fan and you're looking forward to part two. It is very different though. Just bear that in mind.
Cool. Wow. Thanks, Ben.
You're very welcome.
And thanks, Square Enix, for telling us the code.
Yes. Thank you very much. Should we pass it back over to you?
Yes. I think, hey, me, what's question two, please? Well, question two comes from Steve. Just Steve. Hey, it's just Steve. Cool
just
name.
Steve. Uh-huh.
Hello, you Christmas presents of joy. With God of War Ragnarok being called a 1.5, rather than God of War 2, and Spider-Man doing similar with Miles Morales, do you think we'll start to see more of what would be an old school expansion pack? Also, do you prefer getting a 1.5 in a world you already know, or would you prefer a whole new game in a 2? Hope the big beardy fellow brings you everything you want. Stay safe. Love you. Bye. Steve.
Thanks, Steve. Firstly, I've not heard the narrative about Ragnarok being called 1.5, but that's insane. It's not.
It's like it's, 50 hours
It's
game.
A real big sequel. It's not a 1.5.
Well, that was going to be my answer. Like, so in terms of size and scale, it's clearly not a 1.5. It's a 2. I don't know if Steve is, you know, if semantically we're talking about the fact that whether a 1.5 is something set in the same world and a 2 would be something set in a new world. I mean, yeah, Miles Morales was set in the same world. It was set in the New York, you know, set in Manhattan. But really, the reason that was called a 1.5 was because of its size and scale.
Yeah, its runtime, I would say.
And its runtime, yeah. So that was a bit like an expansion pack in a sense. It was probably somewhere between the two. I wouldn't say, I think it was too big to call it an expansion pack, maybe. But God of War as an expansion pack, I don't think is fair to say. So, I mean, to answer the question, would I prefer getting a 1.5 in a world I already know or a whole new game in a 2? It's probably a case-by-case thing. If it's a game that I really enjoy and that I've played a lot and that I kind of have a hankering to go back to, but it's like, well, I'll just be playing the same game I've just played, then it's always nice to have some kind of expansion pack or something like that. So I mean, just Crash Bandicoot 4, for example, is a game I've replayed a couple of times already. And if there was some sort of expansion release for that, I'd be like, hey, that's great. But on the other hand, it's always nice to have a sequel to a game that you really like. And so it's very much a case by case. And sometimes it's like you'd be happy with either. And it's difficult to choose. To use the Crash Bandicoot example, if there was an expansion pack for Crash 4, I'd be like, yeah, I'll play that. But if they said, hey, here's Crash Bandicoot 5, it's coming out soon, I'd be over the moon. So I don't know. Hope the big beardy fella brings you everything you want. Well, we'll see, won't we? Whether we deserve it.
And in conclusion, I've been very bad.
Whether we get our sequels
been incredibly
or our
naughty.
Expansion packs. Ashton?
I am a big fan of a DLC that functions as an expansion pack of sorts. I like when games give me DLC that adds more to the story, gives me more of world to explore if there's like a new area or it's back where I've been before. I really like that in games, and I think that that is great. In terms of what I want from a sequel, I kind of don't really mind if it's in the same world. Mm. Like, I know that some people are a bit funny about it. I think Miles Morales maybe is an outlier here, given that it was literally exactly the same city just at Christmas. But there's only so many places you can put Spider-Man and it work. But I do think that God of War is definitely not a 1.5, it's a 2. And although we explore very similar areas, it's all very different, which I think is good. And on the other hand, Horizon Forbidden West was in a completely different map that we'd never been to before, which, again, worked really well. So I do think that there is, like, this argument that it has to be completely new in terms of what a sequel is. But also, if you wanted a completely new area, maybe just play a different game. Because if you want a new world and a whole new experience, that doesn't tend to be a sequel. That tends to be, like, a spin-off more so. But I do think that, hey, an expansion pack is great. Give me DLCs. I love them. Give me more game to play of games I love. But also, I, like Peter, wouldn't be upset if it's just a sequel that's coming. I already want another Horizon game, and it's only just come out. And I'm getting a DLC, which will tide me over for about a week. So I do think that there's a lot of expansion pack-like stuff coming out, and I do think it's great. But also, I'm fine with a sequel that's set in the same world and explores the same themes / story as the first one, because that's what a sequel is supposed to do.
That's the thing. It kind of speaks to where the value seems to be being placed on some games that are being developed now, where, like, oh, a good game is a game that has a huge world to explore. Therefore, in a sequel, you wouldn't want to do that same world again, so we'll make a new world kind of thing. But on the other hand, some people would say, well, a good sequel is one that's got just a compelling story and that exists for a reason. And in a way, it's irrelevant whether that's set in the same world or not. So depending on what you think makes a good sequel, if you think, or what makes a good game, I should say, if you think that a good game is one where you're exploring a world and ticking off map markers, that's fine if that's what you're into. But it kind of stands to reason that therefore a sequel to that game would probably have to be a different world in order to make that gameplay worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're in it more for perhaps story and characters and just lore, then you could get away with a game such as a Spider-Man, for example, being set in New York again,
yeah,
but having a compelling reason to be back there.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And Miles Morales was, like, different enough in the mechanics that it offered you where it did feel like a new game. You could definitely say that, oh, it's just an expansion on the first one. I can completely see that, and especially with the length of that game. But also, it was a pretty good game. So
yeah,
if you want to class it as a 1.5, which I guess you kind of could do, given that the new Spider-Man coming out is called Spider-Man 2, that we know of so far, I guess maybe it is a 1.5 because it's not technically a sequel to the first game, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's a follow-on.
That's the thing, right? I think Sony tend to do it a lot more, or have done it a lot more, than a lot of other publishers. You've got, obviously, Miles Morales. There was the Uncharted Lost Legacy, yeah, as well, which was, you know, both of them are full games. They're full experiences, but they're just not as meaty as their numbered counterparts, should we say. And personally, I love that. I think that's a really good system to have, because obviously games are very complicated. They take a long time to make. But certainly, if we're assuming that work on Miles Morales started when work on the first Spider-Man was wrapping up, it took them about 2 years to make Miles Morales. And Insomniac in particular, I think, are very good at it. Ratchet and Clank, Rift Apart. I don't know how long they were working on that, obviously, but that wasn't a huge game that took forever to finish as well. And it felt like those came out in relatively quick succession as well. That studio just keeps pumping out games that I think are of a really good value in terms of the amount of time you will get out of it versus respecting your time in terms of not going on forever and ever.
And so, how long it takes them to develop them in the first place.
Well, exactly. Yeah, if we can get a Miles Morales every 2 years, which I know is not realistic because, as you say, it's set in the same city. It uses a lot of the same mechanics. They were in a fortunate position to be able to pick up a lot of work that had already been done and run with it. If we could get a game like that every couple of years, as opposed to every 5, 6 years, 7 years maybe for a proper sequel, then I would go for that every time. No questions asked. But to answer Steve's question, I would still prefer a proper sequel over a 1.5, but I think that there's a lot of space for a 1.5. as and when. In terms of expansions and DLC, though, DLC and expansions these days, the problem I have with them is that they release so long after the game has come out that I've either uninstalled it, I've forgotten how to play, or I'm just not that interested in coming back to it anymore. And that's the realistic situation that we find ourselves in regarding the length of time it takes to make these things now. You know, they'd get crucified if it was ready 3 months after launch because people would say, why wasn't it in the full game? But equally, these things take a lot of time to make and they're getting more and more complicated. So I would prefer, in a very black and white with no gray definitions of what 1.5 means situation, I'd prefer twos, but I would take a 1.5 any day of the week. And if I could get a 1.5 every 2 years, I would switch to that method of production completely. Again, with no nuance at all to the conversation, that's what I would prefer personally.
That's fair.
It's time for something a bit strange. It is called Weird News.
Weird News.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It's weird news time. Time for some weird video game news. If you want to submit some weird news, follow us on relevant social media platforms, that being Facebook and Twitter, and look out for a post that goes out towards the start of the week. Post your weird news under that, and you may get a shout out here, and we'll weird your read news. However, if you want to guarantee yourself a shout out here, you need to go to patreon.com/teamtriplejump. Support us at a certain tier, and you will definitely get a shout out because you're a podcast producer, friend.
Yeah.
Just like Nathan.
And G.Y. Goliath.
And Nexus Polaris.
And Walco.
And Nicole Hansen.
And Ellie Nicholas.
And Erica Hutchinson.
And Melody Albonet.
And Katie Garrett.
And Gabrielle Philippin.
Thank you, podcast producers.
Thank you, podcast producers. What's your weird news, Peter? What have you got?
I've got a weird news that was sent in by multiple people. I've had it DM'd to me. I think it was posted more than once on the threads. I have brought along the link specifically sent by
sent by
RB at R_B84, but thanks to everyone who sent us this story. Rules boss.
He was born in 1984.
This is from Kotaku, written by Zach Zvesen or Zvesen. Final Fantasy Remake has a painting with a Getty watermark. Square Enix's new RPG remake, Crisis Core Final Fantasy
VII. That's not a remake. I've just realized it's not a remake. That's wrong, Zach.
Square Enix's new RPG remake.
It's a remaster.
Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion seems to contain artwork ripped from the Getty Images website.
It's all a load of rubbish. They're all squoodles. I don't know how we're bothering them. What's the difference?
What, remaster and remake?
Yes. Yeah,
so there's a very clear difference, and Zach should know better, as he's titled this, clearly, manipulatively, not using the full game name to try and trick people into thinking that the proper actual Final Fantasy VII remake is the one that's got the mistake in it. I see you, Zach. Do better. Be better. It's a remaster.
Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion was released today and is a solid remastering / remake.
Shut up.
Of a beloved PSP title.
You can't just put them both in there.
But at least one painting in the new game contains a little something extra. A Getty Images watermark, implying that the in-game painting was created using an image preview taken directly from that service's website. In our review posted earlier today, we noted that the new remake is a faithful adaptation of the original game, complete with flaws that come about from being overly dedicated to being a perfect prequel. And like the original...
Or the fact that it's a remaster and has the same flaws as the original, because it's a remaster.
And like the original, while the first half or so of the game is solid, the ending makes for a, quote, disappointing conclusion. Mm-hmm. I guess that's a quote from their own review.
Yeah.
It's a damn good-looking remake, nonetheless.
Stop saying it. It's an apple/oranges, we all love it here.
Say it more.
However, we've noticed that the new visuals come with a new mistake in the form of a watermark left on at least 3 instances of an in-game painting. During Chapter 8 of the game, you'll enter a Shinra mansion. In this very nice-looking and opulent home, you'll find many fancy paintings hanging on the walls. Look closely, and you'll discover these are real paintings. Look a little closer... And further closer, and you'll clearly see where Square Enix grabbed the art from. Hello there, Getty, it says as a caption to an image. Ashton, I don't know if you've seen this.
No, I have not.
Getty Images.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So good.
That's so good.
I love that. Can't believe they didn't remake them, huh? That's weird.
Yeah. Yup, that's a big old Getty Images watermark right in the middle of it. I was able to track down the exact painting that Square Enix grabbed using our own Getty account. It's a piece by artist John Crowther depicting Ludgate Circus in London in 1881.
I'm curious, because they've used a lot of assets from the Final Fantasy VII remake. I'm curious whether this painting is also in that, but no one's noticed it.
Which one?
The original. No, the remake.
Which the remake? Actual Final Fantasy.
Are we talking about this Final remake? Or are we talking?
No, the actual Final Fantasy VII remake.
Okay.
I wonder if they've like this asset is also in there. Maybe. And just none of us have spotted it before.
Oh, possibly. Yeah.
Could be.
Kotaku reached out to Square Enix but didn't hear back before publication. It appears that whoever grabbed this image from Getty and possibly didn't pay to license it, as the watermark is still there, stretched it out and cropped most of its top to make it fit in the frame. And that isn't a one-off error. The resulting painting appears at least 3 times in this area of the game, complete with the Getty watermark. Whoops! This isn't the first time a big Square Enix RPG has shipped with a mistaken watermark included. Kingdom Hearts 3 also included a watermark during one cutscene. However, that was a blink and you'll miss it moment, and not an easy to find painting that appears multiple times and can be seen clearly by anyone paying attention. If you want to see this mistake yourself, I'd go to the mansion sooner than later. As I imagine, they've missed out the word rather there. and I imagine Square Enix will be patching it out shortly.
That is weird.
Could they get sued for that?
Don't think
if
so.
If they haven't got the rights to use it. I suppose there's watermark still on it.
If there's evidence, if it can be proven that they have used that without licensing it, then there could definitely be legal action about that. But it's whether they might actually have a Getty account.
And just didn't.
And for some reason they weren't logged in.
Or it was a placeholder and they forgot to.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry for getting so cross about remakes and remasters.
Hey, it's okay.
I just think it's very simple. And everyone makes mistakes and that's fine. But he even said remaster in there too. It just makes me cross.
Yeah.
They're different things. They're different things.
Yeah.
It's different. So, Ashton.
I have some news. It comes from podcast producer Gabrielle Philippink.
Oh, thank you.
On Facebook. Kotaku by John Walker. One of Steam's most popular games is about watching rubber duckies float. Placid Plastic Duck Simulator has an incredible 98% positive review rating on Valve's storefront.
Wow.
Seems like this is a sponsored article. Huh. Cheeky. John, hide that little We Make Commission from Links on this page button, do you?
Oh.
I saw it. Idle games are one of the most surprising breakout niches of the last few years. Although the genre's name is somewhat of a misnomer. For the first while, yes, these games are typically anything but idle, as you frantically click until you reach a point where the game starts to play itself. Now, Placid Plastic Duck Simulator truly is an idle game. You do absolutely nothing but watch some plastic ducks float in a pool. And I'm here to tell you that it's one of the most highly rated games on Steam. As first reported by the excellent Game Discover Co. newsletter, PPDS's popularity on Steam isn't a sudden spike. It is, to be more reasonable, a succession of spikes since its original release in July this year. Since then, the barely interactive game has received over 3,500 overwhelmingly positive reviews on Steam, currently registering at the almost unheard of 98% positive ratings. And why?
Why?
On one level, this genuinely is nothing other than watching rubber duckies floating in a blandly rendered backyard pool. At first, you have one yellow duck, but as an on-screen duckometer fills, new ducks fall from the sky.
Duckometer.
Yes. These come with their own designs, perhaps sporting a headband or a top hat and pipe, or they may be cleverly disguised as a sprinkled donut. This is what it looks like, by the way.
Oh. It looks a lot like Super Rubber Dub if people played that back in the day.
Was that the one with just the ones that bounce around the room?
No, there was a PS3 launch game.
Oh, right.
Where you tilt your six-axis controller and you move rubber ducks around a little watery maze. You have to collect all the ducks and then get to the plug hole.
Yeah.
There was a very simple game on PC, I think. It was just like an indie game where the room fills with ducks that just bounce all over the place.
Nice.
More and more over time.
Your interaction is limited to awkwardly moving the camera around, pivoted on a selected ducky. The view gently bobs up and down with the water, while serene background noises of birds chirping and wind blowing soundtrack the banality. Or you can turn the awful music on, which you shouldn't do. And then they just talk about how it's got a day-night cycle and people really like it.
That's a lot of words about the rubber duck game.
Sponsored article.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Word count.
Yeah.
Weird. 98%.
98%. Wow. It says at the bottom that it's got the same review score as Half-Life and Stardew Valley.
Brilliant.
And isn't that what is it Majora's Mask, the most or is it Ocarina of Time is the most highly rated game on Metacritic of all time, and it's 99%, I think, or 98%.
Yeah, there's a couple of GTAs. I think maybe GTA 4 is 98 or something. It's like a ridiculous number, but weird.
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 Huh.
I've got some weird news that comes courtesy of @tiredauthordan on Twitter. It's from thegamer.com, written by Rhiannon Bevan. And the headline is, after more than 2 years, this Mario 64 record has been broken with a drum kit.
Fun.
Oh.
The Super Mario 64 speedrunner who plays with a drum kit has done it again, breaking the 20-minute barrier after 2.5 years to practice. Yes. Streamer CZR performed the incredibly impressive feat live with his viewers, understandably over the moon to reach such a milestone in the wild speedrunning category. This comes just a few months after we covered CZR's previous record of 21 minutes and 9 sections, it says.
Come on.
Now, the world, and it's underlined because it's a hyperlink. Now, the world record is 19 minutes and 40... Now, the world record is 19 minutes and 48 savings.
What? Is this some very strange terminology in the speedrun?
No, they've just used different... I don't know what's going on.
Why is... It's not just the word sections hyperlinked, is it?
This comes... Just a few months after we covered CZR's previous record of 21 minutes and 9 sections, now the world record is 19 minutes and 48 savings.
Savings?
I don't know what's happening.
Are we being pranked?
Is this a prank article? I don't know. I kind of want to read the rest of the article just in case. But no, there is now a world record. When has there been the, you know, because of course it does. Playing normally is just too easy, I guess. Cool. I mean, the takeaway from that article for me is that potentially speedrunners have different ways of saying seconds, or someone has not proofread that article at all.
If you want to make 48 savings, head to...
Clubcard.tesco.
Exactly, yes.
That was very unexpected. Yeah. That's completely thrown
Pretty
me off.
Weird, huh?
It's kind of blown my mind a bit. There we are.
Perhaps you'd like a question from Robert Golding.
I was actually thinking for your brain.
Not that you have that effect on people, Robert. I'm not suggesting that.
Jesus.
My mind.
Hi, Bap. First time question asker, but long time listener. Well, thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Robert.
There's been quite a bit of talk over the last few episodes about finding games difficult to either pick up, due to the amount of time to complete them, or lack of free time to play games. Have any of you considered taking or have taken a break from playing video games, or do you feel under pressure due to your work to keep playing, which I could imagine creates additional pressure? I know Ben took a break from streaming, and I have certainly in the past had long periods without playing games to refresh my enjoyment for them. Additionally, have you considered different ways to play? The Switch and Steam Deck are great examples of a more relaxed way to play, particularly without having to use the TV to play. Much love, Rob Golding.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you, Rob.
It's a good question. I do feel a need to at least play something in a given week. I know occasionally we have a what we playing segment, and I know I'm not the only one who said I've been away or I've just been too busy to play anything this week. But generally, I feel like I've got to make sure I play at least one thing. Even though I think I would actually benefit from taking a kind of a full detox break from playing games and then kind of coming back to it and feeling like re-energized. But yeah, I do feel like it's not something that I can really justify. It's a bit of a kind of a privileged problem to have, like, oh, because my job involves playing games, I can't really not do it at home. Putting that aside, I do think there's like a bit of a... I feel the need to make sure I'm at least playing something so I can talk about it on the podcast. I don't mind streaming as much, like, because I feel like that tends to be something a bit more... I often play just like retro stuff or stuff that's just there for fun, whereas... Again, I feel like ideally, if I can, I'd rather talk about something a bit more contemporary in what we play in. I still do play a lot of old stuff and talk about that on the podcast. But where I can, I will try and like lean towards something that's come out a bit more recently. Whereas on stream, I know I can just play whatever I want. I know I can like play the same game again that I've played before if I want to. I think that's how I feel about it. Ashton?
I don't really feel like pressured to play games, not very often anyway. Most times on a week, I'll find myself just naturally playing games because that's what I do for fun and what I do to relax. And I'm not as old as Peter, so maybe when I'm 30, I will feel the same as Peter does.
Yeah, I should clarify that mine is about the lack of time rather than not wanting to.
Yeah,
just to make that clear.
Yeah. But also, I don't really do anything most of the time, apart from play games. There is the like occasional week where I just kind of want to sit and like watch TV or watch movies. I don't want to have to like actively engage my brain. But then the Switch tends to come in handy because I'll pop a terrible Christmas Hallmark movie on and I'll just play a game on the Switch. Mm. But I do tend to like not have to worry about, oh, I haven't played anything. Saying that though, this week I did feel a bit like, oh, I haven't had a chance to play anything because I've been moving. So I did feel a little bit of that pressure to be like, oh, quickly got to like play a little something before Thursday to make sure I've got something to talk about. But I wouldn't feel bad if I didn't have anything to talk about because sometimes life gets in the way, you know?
Yeah.
And that's fine. But most of the time, I've not really got to worry about it and I've not really considered having to take time off of playing games. Obviously, like if it was becoming an issue where I had other stuff to do and I was like, I need to play an hour of game now, then, you know, maybe I would. But for the most part, I'm pretty chill about the whole thing. Pretty chill. So, yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
It's fun. To be clear, I haven't stopped streaming because I don't want to play games or I have no time to play games. It's because I just wasn't feeling streaming. It was the fact that I didn't want to stream. It wasn't that I didn't want to play games or didn't feel like I had the time to play games. My general opinion on this, yes, there has been a lot of conversation about games getting bigger and being longer. Mm. And I suppose it's part of the nature of what we do for a living that we feel like we need to consume these games as fast as possible because these games aren't necessarily designed for you to finish them in a week. You know, people do play these games across months. And for some people, that's perfect because that's how they play games. That's never how I've played games. Even before I worked in games, I wanted to consume it all as fast as possible and then play the next new thing, the next big thing. And especially now that we do this for a living, there is something of a pressure to always make sure that you can't play everything, but at least to stay somewhat up to date with the biggest stuff. And especially in the past sort of 6 months or so, it's been relentless. Mm. There's been something out, which is amazing because it just means there's loads to play. But it does mean that I haven't been able to feel like I can really take my time to enjoy games as much as I would like to because, A, they're really big and they take a lot of time to finish, and B, there's always something on the horizon that's just about to come out that will need to be played next. And no one's forcing us to do it, but it's certainly, at least it's the mindset that I have, that I then want to play these new games as soon as they come out. And it is partially my fault because I know that there are plenty of smaller experiences that are really, really good, but those games aren't really what I want to play necessarily. Unfortunately, I'm attracted to the big budget, crazy, over-the-top video games, and they just happen to be getting bigger and to be getting larger.
There's a lot of them coming out next year as well, like early next year.
February is rammed full of games.
For the first three or four months, there are multiple games where I'm thinking, okay, I'm just going to have to change my evening routine so I can play these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. So for me, it's not necessarily about taking a break or even shaking up how I even play games. It's just busyness in life and the games that I want to play taking up more and more of the time that I have available to play games. Outside of streaming, it's very, and recording videos, it's very rare that we don't sit at our desks and play video games. That's like a tiny, tiny, tiny portion of what we actually do day to day. It's still an incredible privilege, as Peter says, to be able to do that, but it's not like we're able to make up for lost time. You know, Peter's got to talk about God of War this week on the podcast, so he's just going to get a few hours in on a Tuesday.
Yeah, just sit like in the office at my desk.
That's not how it works. No. Everything that we talk about that we've been playing, it has been in our own time.
Apart from launch title games, in which we'll sit next to Ben shouting at his Nintendog.
Oh my God, the Nintendog, I was losing my mind. Yeah, I do play those in the office.
Blowing directly into something, and we can just hear him going...
Oh, it's rubbish, man. I hate blowing into microphones. It feels disgusting. But yeah, those are one of the few examples. As I said, when we're making a video...
That's the capture footage as much as anything.
Yeah, it's for footage capture, really.
Be able to write
a
script,
But yeah, it's just... I would love to be able to play everything. And Peter and I know a few people who do play everything. And we just don't know how they can find the time.
No.
It's unbelievable. But we're a small team. We try to cover as much as we can. And so we do, you know, play as many things as we can find the time to do. I really enjoyed playing Pokemon on my Switch in bed the past sort of month or so. But unfortunately, there aren't that many games on Switch that necessarily appeal to me or that I would like to dedicate my time to playing. Those games are on the consoles in the living room that I have to sit on the sofa and sink dozens of hours into. So it's my fault as much as anything else, but I don't feel like I can really necessarily change anything up to fix that. It's just the way it is.
It's definitely more the new game releases that I feel more pressure to play than just the everyday like podcast what we play in section, simply because it's like we want to make sure that we have stuff to tell you, because we often get a lot of questions about like, have you played this game? What do you think? Because it's that weird thing of people relying on our, not everyone does, don't get me wrong, relying on our opinion of a game to see if they want to give it a go, if they want to spend their money on it. So there's that whole thing of being like, well, I haven't tried it yet, but I will, I promise. And also running in our kind of online spheres, it's really hard to avoid spoilers about things.
Yeah, there's that as well.
So it's like you have to really either actively like avoid spoilers by muting things or just try and play the game as quick as you can before it gets spoiled. So yeah.
I love games. I don't want to stop playing games. I don't want to take a detox. I don't want to stop. I don't want to adjust. I can't really adjust
anything.
Need time
to stop for a few weeks.
If we could just, if we could just freeze time so I could play all the games, that'd be great. I'm not complaining because I'm not complaining at all. And it's not.
Yeah, you want the publishers to stop just for a couple
of weeks. Exactly.
Please,
I don't want people to think that necessarily that we're complaining about, you know, the length of games as such. It's just that it's just more a voicing of frustration that there's not enough time in the day to play them. And God knows I want to. I really wish that I had the time that I had, say 10 years ago when I was at university and I was just sat on my ass for like 14, 15 hours just playing games nonstop. I would kill to have that back, but it's just not realistic anymore. So fitting it
January
in is harder.
January is quite quiet, so in terms of game releases. That's when we'll all I haven't played
we'll
Gotham
catch up
Knights
on
yet.
Everything.
And I
yeah, I want to play Gotham
that.
Knights as
so
well.
So much to do.
I want to play Gotham Knights too. Maybe go back to Plague Tale.
No, I'm not going
Is Resident Evil 4 out in January or February?
February,
okay.
We got time.
Good time, everyone.
Yeah.
Hey, we're getting older. Yeah. It's just more things to do, unfortunately. Century. Let's move on to something rather large. It's called
The Big Discussion.
It's Big Discussion time. Time for the big video game discussion this week, coming courtesy of Cameron Keywood, who says, hello, BAP. Future Xbox Series X/S first-party games such as Starfield are now going to cost $70. With these titles also coming to Game Pass day and date, are Microsoft doing this to attract more people to Game Pass, or is it, as said in the statement, the price reflects the content scale and technical complexity of these titles? What do you think, Peter?
I don't know if it's that like complicated. I don't think it's that there's, you know, they're sort of secretly trying to push. Well, I don't know, actually. Now that I think about it, I suppose that is a pretty big incentive. You know, if you know that, like, it's going to cost me $70 a time, like, whereas if I just get Game Pass, then it's there for me. Mm-hmm. Maybe that is the intention, but it also wouldn't surprise me if the price is just reflecting the content scale and technical complexity of these titles. Now, again, it kind of comes down to like one game to the next, whether you can justify a $70 price tag for the size and scale of something. Because it's very easy to say, this is a mainstream AAA game, therefore it's cost a lot of money to make and we're going to charge $70 for it. But actually, some of the mainstream like big hitters aren't necessarily going to be like giant games when you make, you know, comparisons like Starfield. A lot of them will be, but not all of them will. So it'll be interesting to see how many of those games end up being priced at $70 and how that is justified with, you know, ones of slightly different scales. Like it's more nuanced than that. However, I do think that if you think about something like Starfield, which allegedly has 1,000 planets.
1,000 planets.
Not allegedly, it does have 1,000 planets.
Todd said.
But the question is, how detailed are those planets? How much work has gone into each one of those planets? You can kind of understand where, you can kind of, I can see where $70 might come from with a game like Starfield. I imagine an awful lot of money has gone into developing that game. But we won't really know until we sit down and play it and see how kind of in-depth and detailed these planets are and what there is to do within the game in terms of gameplay mechanics and stuff. So I think it will be that will be a good benchmark to see, okay, this new game has come out. Let's see just how big it is, and let's try and do the mental gymnastics to work out, does $70 justify, or does an increase in price, is that justified by the size and scale of this game? I don't know. But I do think it is going to be incentive to draw people towards Game Pass, because it just makes more financial sense. If you're playing enough games day to day or week to week, then it just makes more sense to do that. Whether it's like Microsoft actively intentionally saying, let's up our prices on the shelf to make people go to Game Pass, I don't know. But certainly it will be something that does draw them to Game Pass, perhaps organically or perhaps intentionally.
Mm. We've talked about Game Pass and its profit a lot. And we've also talked about the rise in price of games a lot. But I do think that, like Peter says, the size of a game, you know, how do we work out what constitutes $70 price tag? But when you think about it, I'm going to talk about Sony now. Having played Horizon Forbidden West, I put like 80 hours into that game and I paid £70 for it. So in my head, I'm like, hey, less than £1 an hour. Brilliant. Good for me.
Cheaper than your heating.
Cheaper than my heating. But I do think that, I don't think it's a conscious effort to charge $70 and then put it on Game Pass. I think it's a, look, we're putting it on Game Pass. If you haven't already got it, hey, why not try it now? Because this big game that everyone's very excited for and has been excited for a while is coming to our very good platform and you should definitely join it. It does, I think, undermine itself a little bit in terms of how they can justify charging $70 for it and then also give it away for the low, low price of £10 a month. So I do think that maybe it undermines themselves a little bit, but I don't think the general consumer is going to worry about that. I think they're just going to be excited that it's coming to Game Pass, or they're just going to buy it. Mm. So I don't think it's a conscious effort to be like, if we do this, more people will go to Game Pass. And I don't think it's going to reflect the game itself that they're putting it on Game Pass, because they've put a lot of their big titles recently on there. And I just think it makes, you know, from the track record that they've had in terms of games going on Game Pass, I think it makes logical sense that Starfield would go on Game Pass given their track record. But I do think it is surprising that it's going on Game Pass day one, that they're not even giving it a bit of a delay to sell copies of the game for $70 and then put it on Game Pass like 2 months later. I think that's a kind of crazy decision, but I guess, you know, we don't know anything about the profits of Game Pass, but they must be that they make a lot of money from Game Pass that they know they can justify potentially not selling as many copies of Starfield for $70 via putting it on Game Pass. So there must be something going on behind the scenes that justifies them putting this ginormous 1,000 planet game on Game Pass.
If there's more than 1,000 planets, I'm going to be really cross.
If there's even 999, I'm asking for my money back.
With Microsoft now adopting this approach, $70 will be pretty much the industry going rate for next-gen games. You've already got Sony. I think 2K have committed to it as well. And now with Microsoft as well, that's just going to be the accepted price going forwards. People can complain about it. Understandably, $70 is a lot of money. £69.99 is a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But that is what they, you know, what most people will be charging, unfortunately. I think that the bonus of incentivizing people to, or the incentivization of getting people onto Game Pass because it costs now even more to buy the game, that is probably as much a calculated decision as it is a byproduct of just wanting to recoup as much costs as possible for the people that do still want a physical copy, that do want to own it themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think this new approach particularly applies with franchises and publishers and developers that Activision currently own and potentially might eventually own if it goes through, that publish on other platforms as well. Because if you're able to charge PlayStation users $70 for the new Call of Duty, and it's on Game Pass for free, not only are you going to make an absolute mint, more so than you would have done if you were charging the previous standard price, but there's also, the bonus of, hey, you can play it for free over here. You know that, right? Not free, but you can pay it as part of the subscription service, you know. So I think it makes total sense, them putting the price up. But I do think that it's just as much about incentivizing Game Pass as it is just trying to make some more money off the cost of the game. But as you say, Ashton, if it's day one, then they're not going to get much of an opportunity to charge people that price. And if it's exclusive, even less of a chance. So I think this is just... I don't think there's necessarily much we can read into the fact that they're starting with Starfield. I think it's just... It begins with, let's just start with Starfield.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any
rhyme
or reason for it.
It's the next big Microsoft title that's coming out.
Yeah.
They've got obviously third-party games coming out, but it's the next big Xbox Microsoft release that's coming into our pockets this year. So it makes it next year. So I guess it makes sense that this is the first one to do that.
And I, like the majority of people around the world, cannot wait to play it for £10. I very much look forward to that, but $70, that's where the price is at now. When Nintendo get their new console out, I mean, Nintendo games stay at full price for months, years anyway, so when they go up, that's gonna sting a bit.
Well, when they release the new console, maybe all these games might actually start going down in price a little bit, so
maybe
the average person might be able to afford maybe more than one Switch game in one purchase. They wouldn't be like...
Whoa.
You want Pokemon Soul Silver or Heart Gold on DS, it's still like 40 quid.
That's true.
That's secondhand, and I think because I had a Pokewalker, but I was talking to editor Kieran about it the other day, and it still costs a fortune, like most exclusive
Madness.
Switch games. But yeah.
It does. The one good thing is, you know, I'm going into Starfield feeling a bit cynical, but really... Well, we'll see, Todd. Come on, Todd.
Yeah.
And at least if you go into it feeling like you've only paid $10 for it, or, I mean, not even for it alone, but, you know, everything else you've played on Game Pass that month, then if it does turn out to only have 999 planets or it's otherwise rubbish, then you don't feel like, can't believe I sunk $70 onto this thing. I know that's also why things like reviews exist and so on and so forth, but, yeah, it's nice to at least feel like you're not spending that much money on one thing that you might not end up liking very much. You can just sort of give it a go on Game Pass and see whether it's worth spending some time on.
Yep, absolutely. And then, when talking about the $70 price tag, it's a conversation we've had before, but it all comes down to the value proposition, I suppose. What do you value most?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the fact that it costs a lot of money to make because games are costing more and more and more to make? Is it the fact that it goes on for dozens and dozens and dozens of hours? Mm-hmm. Is it the fact that you're going to really enjoy it? It's difficult to quantify, but regardless, $70 is a lot, and games are already an expensive hobby. So anyone choosing to buy it on Xbox over playing it on Game Pass, there's got to have a pretty good reason. And I would be interested in hearing it, quite frankly. Yeah. So
let us know in the comments if you're going to buy it on disc for $70.
Yeah,
and
let us
why.
Know. Yeah. In fact, that might be why they're starting with Starfield, because it's not going to really affect anyone because everyone's going to be getting it on Game Pass. And then that was the blow that was, you know, let me put it another way. If they started the $70 trend with a game that was on multiple platforms, that it was, you know, hey, PlayStation, you're going to have to pay $70 to play Minecraft 2.
Yeah.
So sorry about that. But it was, you know, on Game Pass as part of the subscription. That would probably sting a little more as the first. It's still going to make headlines, the first game that's on other platforms from Microsoft that costs $70, but I feel like potentially there's a tactical move that by doing it with Starfield that very few people are actually going to spend the $70 on, perhaps it makes it less of a story.
People become aware the price is $70.
Yeah, it's going up.
Very few people,
but
actually
it's not
going to
affect
spend,
you.
Yeah.
It could be
it's
that.
Slow boil.
Don't know. Don't know for sure, but either way, let us know if you're buying it. I would be fascinated to know
why.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. You can let us know what you thought of everything we discussed in the comments below and various other places around the internet that Peter's going to tell you right now.
YouTube.com/TeamTripleJump is where all our videos are, and YouTube and Twitch.tv/TeamTripleJump for our live streams. We stream on both. And when we're streaming on both, we're modded by Lord Brotovich, Trowling Badger, and Mr. Black. If you've got Amazon Prime, part of the bundle is a Twitch sub. It's not an extra cost or anything like that. It's just in there if you've got it already. So spend that on us if you like. You get all the usual benefits, and so do we. So it's great. Twitter.com and Facebook.com/TeamTripleJump for video and live stream announcements, legacy video content, Twitch stream highlights of the week, bits of news, all sorts of things posted largely by Fraser, who looks after our social media for us, and also a little bit of Ashton Matthews as well. Ashton Matthews is also over on TikTok.com/@TeamTripleJump, where she's ticking and or talking at various intervals. And Patreon.com/TeamTripleJump. You can go over there and see all of our different tiers with all of our different rewards. There are loads of them from as little as $1 a month and up to a lot more for many, many nice prizes and treats.
Yes, that's
prizes.
It
is not the worst.
Prizes.
Rewards.
We have a website. It's jjju.mp. Spells jumps. Very clever. If you want to go to our Discord and chat with our wonderful community, go to jjju.mp/Discord. On Discord, we're modded by Jack, Joe, Tori, and Hollow Eyes. And if they tell you to do something, bloody well do it. All right?
What?
If you want to listen to the podcast in its audio forms, maybe it's your Christmas party this weekend and you said, how can I bring the vibes? This podcast. Why not go to jjju.mp/podcast? And to check out any of our live stream VODs, go to jjju.mp/VODs. To get a cameo from any of us or James Jenkins, why not go to jjju.mp/cameo? And last but not least, if you want to buy some merch, why not go to triplejumpshop.com? It might still arrive before Christmas if you order it now.
It's getting less and less likely.
Less and less likely.
I think this one might still be available.
Wildcard t-shirt. That one's not available, but that is our merch. I'm not wearing merch underneath, so I'm not going to pull my top up. but you can go to triplejumpshop.com to check out the latest merch. And make sure you're following @triplejumpshop on Twitter for the latest merch announcements. And if you happen to get a Christmas present, which includes some of our merch, why not tag us and @triplejumpshop in it on Twitter, and we'll give it a cheeky like and say you look nice.
Unless you don't, but we'll we'll tell you that you don't.
Yeah.
No, we won't. Bauble, get the bauble.
Yes, the bauble's still available.
Billy Bauble, go get one right now.
It might not arrive in time for Christmas now, but you can still get one next year.
People have been getting their baubles this week.
Oh,
and,
excellent.
And they've been very impressed by them, so... Oh.
And actually, people keep their decorations up until like the 5th or the 6th of January.
That's true.
Maybe it would arrive in time.
Maybe.
For the last day of your tree or something.
Maybe.
What a treat
for
your tree.
Next year.
Why not follow Peter and Ashton on Instagram and Twitter and Hive @ThatPeterAustin and @ScrambledAshton and myself just on Twitter @Confused_Dude. We do lists every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Streams every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Thursday being the joint stream.
Blaze it.
On YouTube. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday being solo streams. On Twitch. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly. Friday for patrons of a certain tier. Sunday for everyone else. The podcast is every Saturday and we do shows all the bloody time. Come check them out. Why not leave a 5-star review on your platform of choice? That could be your Christmas present to us.
Yes.
It's free. Mm. Thank you so much. We'd really appreciate it. It helps to do something to do with Al Gore's rhythms, I believe. Yeah. Something like that, anyway. All sorts of stuff out this week.
Loads.
The Tat Appeal video is out now. It came out yesterday at time of release. Yep. So check that one out. It's long. How long is it looking, Peter?
I've still got a tiny bit left to cut today, but it's already... 5 hours long.
Cool.
How long was last year's in the end?
Half hours.
Yeah, about four.
All right, so it's already longer than last year's. I think it's going to settle at maybe just under 6.
Goodness
me. 5.5 hours, something like that.
Get ready, everyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's out now.
Yes, it is. Check that out on the channel. It's also, Peter, a Weirdest Games Ever week.
It is, and it's a Christmassy one. How wonderful.
How wonderful.
So you can watch Ashton sort of, well, I was going to say struggle through, not that it was difficult, but it's a sensory overload.
Yeah.
Through Christmas Nights into Dreams. Mm. It's Nights into Dreams, but the Christmassy special version.
Yes.
So. I was also quite sick when we filmed it and on some flu meds. And I watched it back the other day and I basically just disassociate for like the whole video.
You just look at the colours. Having a great time.
Listen to Jingle Bells on loop.
Yeah, it's a good one though.
Mm. Yeah, very weird. And finally, go check out the sponsored streams that we've been doing for Splatoon 3. Thank you to everyone for watching. Thank you to Nintendo for sponsoring us. Mm-hmm. Ashton, you've done a couple of streams on it.
Yeah, too.
Peter and I are going to stream it next week as well. Do some Splatoon in the final joint stream of the year. It will just be Peter and myself. Go check out the VODs on the VODs channel for the ones that are already out. That's all. Thank you for listening. All. Peter, can you read the ad, please?
I can. I also thought when we came to this podcast that this was our last one before Christmas, which is why it's such a Christmassy themed sponsor. But nevertheless,
it's Christmas month.
It is Christmas month, Christmas and there might be month. An even Christmassier one next month.
Christmas, it's Christmas fortnight.
Next week,
you know what they say? After November comes Christmas month.
Christmas month.
Merry Christmas.
We're sponsored this week by Xbox Slurries. Slurry. Why do I say that every time? That's very strange.
I like it.
The Xbox Slurries. Xmas.
Thank you for watching, everybody. You look after yourselves. We'll check back in with you on Christmas Eve. I hope all of you are ready to listen on Christmas Eve while you're doing cooking prep and stuff for the big day.
Presents, maybe, if you're leaving it that late.
Rushing down to the 24-hour garage to buy some
parsnips.
Yeah,
they sell them at the garage. Is the question post already live?
It went out on Thursday,
okay.
So it should already be live.
Submit your questions.
Tuesday morning / Monday evening.
We're recording early next week because obviously we're not about for, well, we are about for most of the week, but we're recording earlier in the week, so you can submit your Christmas gaming questions right now. Mm-hmm. Go do it at patreon.com/teamtriplejump. See you next time, everybody. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.